It's currently 50 degrees now. KQEN News Time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Friday afternoon, and we want to go back to a decision by the Roseburg School Board a couple of days ago and talk about plans moving forward for the return to some in-person instruction. Superintendent Jared Corden, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So on Wednesday night, the board had a meeting, looked at a number of options. We've kind of talked about it in a news story as well, but update people, first of all, on the plan for pre-K to six or to five.
So the board met Wednesday night. We had a really well-attended board meeting, and board was able to hear from many staff members and parents, patrons, community members, even some kids, which was great. And I presented the board with three potential scenarios for reopening, all of which were operationally feasible. And after a great deal of input and consideration and board discussion, the board voted to open all of our K-5 schools or pre-K-5 schools in addition to our 6-12 schools, so all schools in the district, on Monday, January 25th.
But there's a difference between pre-K to 5 and 6 to 12, right?
There is. So we're excited to welcome all the kids back in person. That'll be great. I will also mention, for those families who are nervous about returning, we'll also have an option for them to stay remote. It'll be their choice. But we will have a hybrid opening, 6-12. The governor's announcement on the 23rd regarding the health and safety metrics moving from mandatory metrics to advisory has led to a little bit of, questioning by some folks. But that mandate in terms of advisory metrics doesn't change a host of other state health and safety metrics. One of those metrics that remains in place is around cohorting. And so that what initially was 250 kids in a cohort was moved to 100 kids per cohort. Because of that limitation for us, what that means is students can't have contact with more than 100 students in a week. And this limitation or rule is a driving force around what is the hybrid. So in order to comply with this mandate, our high school schedule changed. We have a 4-period day, and we will need to have about half of our students each day. We'll have an A and B at the high school, A and B schedule.
And because obviously in normal times, if we might remember what those are, at the secondary level, I mean, you've got kids going all different directions all day. And even, you would have contact with a whole lot more.
You would. And so I think, you know, again, this is around a provision to keep kids safe. It's around contact tracing. But again, given the difference structurally at the elementary school, for example, with our 8 elementary schools, is we can operate pretty normally with a cohort of 100. Classroom might have 23 kids in it, and the grade level would have under 100 in it. So they can go to lunch together. They can be at recess together. Of course, there's social distancing and masking and doing all that. So we can maintain our normal kind of traditional operation at the elementary school K-5 at the return pre-K-5. The secondary school is different. A lot of that's the cohort size and the structure of that and also the size of our schools.
So what kind of preparations are going on between now and then?
Well, we've had, you know, we've thoroughly established many, many district-wide safety protocols and policies. As a reminder, we successfully opened up our K-3s for about 3 months, and that went really well until the metrics forced us to close again. These involve things like the physical health or physical distancing, visual health screenings, face coverings, disinfecting, sanitation, all that, contact tracing. We actually have purchased another registered nurse, so we have the health and safety measures. But in addition, this opening has also, because of the element of choice, is quite a bit of preparation around how do you offer choice at the secondary level or 4 or 5. So those plans have gone in as well. So we'll have kind of schools embedded in the school, if you will. So there's kind of a school within a school. You've got a distance school. That's the case at the elementary K-5 level. The secondary schools will be a little different. Those students will be part of a cohort, but if they choose to be remote, can still be remote, but in that classroom.
One of the questions I've gotten since Wednesday night was, why wait till the 25th?
Well, I think the board determined that this is the pathway that best fits our established priorities. And those priorities are about the health and safety of our staff and students and about student learning. And I think as they looked at the option and weighed the evidence and have thought deeply about what the data is suggesting, what we know, and they listened to parents and staff members, that was the pathway that they felt would both meet the goals we're trying to accomplish.
Was part of that just having time to make sure you added all the final things put together versus trying to do it real quickly?
Well, we really felt like, I mean, there have been these adjustments. The governor's message on the 23rd was followed by a change or an addition of House Bill 4402, which provided some liability coverage. There were a couple of bumps in how those two things lined up. We really felt like with either scenario, whether it was to return earlier or the current or later, we were ready to go with either one of those.
And I think a lot of people were probably surprised by the governor's announcement.
I was. It was a surprise. There really was no indication of that. There were questions about what that meant. Even in the message, it was unclear about some further direction, which we're supposed to expect by the 19th of January. That was a surprise, but that's kind of been the flavor of the year, actually, for us, is when you think it's going to be a logical pathway forward, oftentimes there's been a shift in that.
And the fact that it literally came hours before Christmas, when everybody school district-wise was technically on a break, probably made your phone ring a bit.
Yeah, I think there was, again, I had several people asking if I knew this was going to happen and could I explain it, and it's taken some explaining after the fact.
With the state making these metrics advisory, what about the concerns, though, when the COVID-19 case counts go up like they have been this week?
You know, we'll continue, you know, through this process. I'm clearly not an epidemiologist or a doctor, but case counts have been, as I said before, I probably pay more attention to these than many things. So we'll continue to monitor, adjust, talk to public health, Oregon Health Authority, ODE. So we're just going to continue to monitor and adjust those, or continue to monitor those and adjust as needed. We're being told to expect additional guidance on the 19th. And I don't know. I think there's a leaning that maybe the metrics might shift a little bit. What is kind of confusing about this for folks, it is kind of for me as well, is although the governor had suggested that this is now all advisory, districts must follow the mandates and what's called the Ready School Safe Learner. And we believe that some of the new threshold guidance, including the metrics, might fall in that box of Ready School Safe Learner, which means it may not all be advisory anymore. There probably will still be some mandates.
One of the things when you began the fall with K-3 in person, were all these procedures when you had drop-off and parents and parents not coming on campus and volunteers and other people, is that still going to be the case?
Yeah, that guidance has not changed. We still have to follow the health and safety metrics and the Ready School Safe Learner guidance. And so unless that changes in this new iteration on the 19th, we'll see that will still be the case.
Talk about some of the protocols, some of the things that you're doing, and once in-person resumes on the 25th, we'll be doing, maybe even on a daily basis, to keep things safe.
So, as I mentioned, there are a host on our website, if people are really interested, there are what's called blueprints we needed to put together. Those are vetted by Oregon Health Authority and Public Health as well. And again, they include a host of things, of course, the basics around making sure there's 6 feet of distance. And we had to move away from tables at the elementary school to desks. We'll do visual health screenings with students. Lots of disinfecting, plans for contact tracing. So those are in play. And I would say additionally, you know, I've been in contact with many other districts who have been open and have been able to mitigate spread and school spread. In fact, according to Dr. Danenhofer, we have had no evidence of, I know we haven't in Roseburg Public Schools, but in any of our surrounding schools in the county, there has not been evidence of spread within the school when schools have been open.
Superintendent Jared Corden of Roseburg Public Schools on Inside Douglas County. And in a moment, we'll continue the conversation, the interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com. 1245 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Douglas County, 1247. Lars Larson at 1. KQEN Local Talk at 4 this afternoon. CBS Audio, America Changed Forever. A special edition today looking at the unprecedented events at the U.S. Capitol earlier in the week, including Gil Gross talking with some CBS News folks who were actually in the Capitol when it was under siege earlier in the week. A lot of things related to that and more this afternoon at 4. Superintendent Jared Corden with us from Roseburg Public Schools talking about the reopening to in-person learning on the 25th. For the secondary in particular, I would imagine you've got some folks kind of excited.
Oh, without a doubt. We've heard from, you know, we haven't had a chance to have our kiddos back at the secondary or grades 4 or 5 either. So I've heard from lots of parents, lots of staff and kids that are excited to come back on the 25th. So I think the announcement, you know, provided a sense of optimism to the community that we can get our kids back.
Well, when we think about it, it's just dawned on me, for some of them, this has been like 10 months.
Yeah, that's correct. We are able to open up our schools this next week and the previous week to what's called limited in-person instruction, so we can start to get kids in. That'll be great to do. But we have, it's interesting, you know, we have lots of kids who have moved here and haven't been in our schools before. We have sixth grade students that have never walked in. I've got one at home into a middle school, and ninth grade students who haven't stepped into the high school this year. So we've got some special plans to make sure those kids can get in at least start to understand where things are at in their school.
Didn't even think about that. That's a little daunting.
Yeah, it's unlike anything I've, you know, really seen before. Normally, in a typical year, you would have, you know, we would plan to make sure those kids have a chance to come in, figure out, hey, you've got lockers now in sixth grade. How does that work? And here's where the cafeteria is. So we want to make sure we have a plan to make sure kids that haven't stepped foot in that building don't feel part of that building yet, even though they may be a third of the way through their career in that building. In one sense, have a sense of, hey, this is my school, and here's where things are at.
Before the break, we were talking about some of the things going on behind the scenes and some of the protocols on a daily basis to keep kids safe. What about taking temperatures as kids and staff come in the morning?
Yeah, this has actually not been part of the current guidance. I think there are, at least from a public health standpoint, questions about the efficacy of that. Hard for me to weigh in there. I'm not a public health expert, but I think what I tend to hear is, people passionate, this would really be a safe procedure. Other people believe that you're maybe spreading the virus well before a temperature might show up, so they question the efficacy of that. Currently not part of the guidance right now.
So what was the board's response? You said there was a lot of discussion about that, and maybe even in comparison to the other options.
Yeah, the response of the board. So, you know, I would just say we had a really well-attended board meeting. It was great to see so many people interested in coming to the board meeting. It was on Zoom, and we have a capacity of 300 on Zoom, and we almost hit it, actually. We were real close to 300 people, which was great. I think the board listened. We had public comment. They've been hearing from, many patrons about this before. They didn't have to necessarily go with any of those options, but felt that those options provided a pathway forward. And I think it was 5-1 was the vote. And so there was a majority vote on that return on the 25th.
What were some of the differences with the other options?
So the first option was to return our elementary kids starting Monday. That would be K-3. There were some questions around liability that have popped up this week. K-3 would have fallen under safe harbor to return 4 or 5 the following week, and then our 6-12 kids on the 25th. The 25th makes a lot of sense. It's the beginning of a semester, and so kids will start at the secondary level, new teachers, new content. So that was the first option. The second option, the one they chose, was everybody back the 25th. The third option was February 16th. Lines a little bit more with the governor's recommendation to get schools back and going by the 15th of February.
And as you heard from people, I imagine the opinions from the virtual audience were pretty diverse.
Yeah, they are. And it's been, you know, one of those learnings this year. You know, I've been reminded over the past several months, there are no universal absolutes in reopening schools. The morality of opening depends to a great extent on your experiences and what your circumstances are. So we've heard, you know, really passionate and oftentimes divergent thinking in terms of, you know, how, you know, should we reopen? Is it the right thing to do? We absolutely need to reopen. So I think the great thing here is that everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants a strong start for our kids in person. And but there are varying opinions on how that should happen.
With kids being out of the classroom this long, what are our teachers, people that are connecting with them, seeing or feeling in terms of sort of the mental health impacts of all this isolation?
It's been a constant theme of our parents, you know, even our kids, and certainly our staff, that there is concern that we need to get kids back. The delay in opening schools or the inability to open in schools has really impacted a great deal of kids. And, you know, this is something that keeps me up at night. We have kids that just, you know, really need to be in school. And I think that impact is a bit disproportionate. It depends on the family. You know, but we have kids that, you know, I hear from quite a few parents who just are pleading and begging. They're seeing their kids slip. They're seeing their kids lose interest in school. They're seeing their kids become depressed. And they know that, you know, we're doing the best we can on remote, and we're working hard on that. Teachers are probably working like they've never worked before. But it's difficult to replace having kids with us each day. And so so I think the general consensus of many educators across the country and here in our county and in our schools and our parents is we're real glad to have a date on the calendar to get back.
And for families, there's a lot of diversity in terms of the support system for the kids. I mean, you have two parents or you have a single parent. You maybe have, maybe they both have to work, you know, where they're out of the house during the day, and that's just really not an option. I've heard about sometimes older kids sort of monitoring younger kids and trying to make that work, or grandparents that come in, but there's even questions about that sometimes with older folks being generally more vulnerable. And then even the technological aspects. Now, a lot of the districts close in, but especially for folks out towards Belrose and some of those areas, not always with the best Wi-Fi and internet capability.
Surely. These are all things we've done our best to troubleshoot to make sure connectivity is there. And that's the easy part. We can get everyone a Chromebook, and we've got hundreds and hundreds of hotspots out, thousands of devices out. What we can't do as well, though, is provide the structure that each kid needs. Each family dynamic's a little bit different. I've heard from lots of families this is working really well for them. But I've heard from lots of families that this is a real struggle, that it's creating an inability for them to work, and they can't pay rent or can't pay their mortgage or put food on the table. We have some real young kids that spend the entire day at home on a computer and don't have the kind of supports that they need to be successful. So it is, when we say unprecedented, this has been unprecedented. I'm so grateful for the community rallying behind this, and we're all doing our best, and I'm excited that we, you know, have an ability to get our schools back open again.
As this has been evolving around the state since the governor's announcement on the 23rd, what are you hearing from other 6A schools? Are they reopening as well?
Well, most of those, you know, we actually had a board meeting that was originally scheduled for this next Wednesday, and we bumped that up given the governor's announcement. And many of those schools have board meetings coming up this week, so it'll be interesting to see. You know, it goes without saying that the vaccines become a question of when those can become available and how do we line up our start date with the vaccines. I don't have a tremendous amount of control over the distribution of those vaccines, but I do think the question of reopening in many districts is how do we ensure we can keep our staff safe as well? And we're working hard to make sure that, is in the way we can to make sure that those become available as soon as possible for our staff.
And do you know now how that might pan out? I've heard talk from the ESD about something on a countywide level for educators.
Yeah, that's right. ESD has done a great job working with local public health. There's a survey that's going to be out hopefully soon. I haven't seen it yet today. We sent some numbers over of total staff in our districts to get prepared. There are about 2,000 educators in the county, and I've heard that the numbers, they can do about 100 per day. 20 days seems like a long time for me to get you know, if everybody decides to get a dose. I'm hoping we can find a way to quickly expedite the vaccine for educators.
Now, with the return at the secondary level to hybrid learning, does that increase the potential for sports to actually take place?
Yeah, we actually began workouts at middle and high schools on Monday this week. Of course, you know, masks are worn inside, outside. They have to have them on, right? Social distancing is observed. So we're, you know, we're getting schedules out. You know, we have a mindset that our seasons, we need to start getting ready for our seasons, preparing for our seasons, especially the fall season. So we're hopeful this could allow kind of that normalcy of athletics and activities get back on and going as well.
And what about updates? If people want to find out more as this kind of evolves, maybe even shifts again, are you still putting a lot of that up on your website?
Yeah, the website is probably the place to go. You know, we have to follow OSAA in terms of their direction for these OSAA sanctioned sports. And so OSAA has their own website, but we've got everything up on the website. People should be able to find. If not, then call district office and we'll get it to you.
Superintendent Jared Corden, Roseburg Public Schools, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for the opportunity.
1258 at News Radio 1240, KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.